Well, good evening, and welcome to the final presentation. And this is our 8th series of talks on Kentucky Live, Southern Culture at its Best, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries and the Kentucky Museum. My name is Ryan Kutz, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services at WKU, I coordinate this series with my colleague in the back there, Peggy Wright, with assistance from our reference coordinator, Brian Carson, and our website guru taking pictures back here, Haiwan Wan. Daniel Peach designed our posters, and our technical specialist tonight is Daniel Pauly. Our speaker tonight is a native of Campbellsville, Kentucky, where her family has lived since her great-grandfather bought land there prior to the Civil War. Her fondest memories of this area are of her grandfather's farm, Green River Lake, 4-H, and reading. She says, reading. Growing up, she always wanted to be an author. And her writing life began in the 5th grade with the short story, The Haunted House. She was most influenced by the Taylor County Library, where she began volunteering at the age of 11. She's a graduate of the University of Kentucky, and received an MA in Mass Communications from the University of South Carolina. And while interning at WVLK Radio in Lexington, Kentucky, she learned from Ralph Hacker to think of herself as one of those MacMahons who make the beautiful cherry furniture. Her first published novel, Calling Home, about the flawed yet lovable people in fictional Falling Rock, Kentucky in the 1970s, was published to considerable acclaim in 2008 by Kensington Press. It was selected as a need-to-read book by Target stores nationally. Detailed descriptions of everything from taxidermy to sewing underwear, from 4-H to junior Miss pageants, will be immediately recognizable to local residents. And where a night on the town might have involved a drive to Bowling Green to eat at the Iron Skillet restaurant. Jana's second novel, The Ocean Inside, set along South Carolina's coastal islands, published by Kensington Press in 2009, was nominated for the Book of the Year award by the Southeastern Independent Booksellers Association. Her first novella, Decorations, was published in November 2009 as part of the holiday anthology Snow Angels, which became a New York Times bestseller. She's won numerous creative writing awards and was a finalist for the Flannery O'Connor Fiction Award. Her short stories have been published in journals and magazines such as Wind, Limestone, Yamasee, the Nantahala Review, and Arts Across Kentucky. One of her most recent essays, The Worst Bad Neighbor, appears in the new anthology, We All Live Downstream. She currently resides in South Carolina and has just finished her third novel, set in Austin, Texas. Please give a warm welcome to Jana MacMahon, who's going to be talking to us tonight about the modern South. So much to consider. Jana?
Well, good afternoon. This is a really nice group. I always love coming to Bowling Green. Bowling Green's like coming home to me. I spent a lot of time here when I was in high school because I did a lot of speech contests. And I would always come to Western and do extemporaneous speaking or radio broadcasting because I was too lazy to actually write a speech. So I enjoy speaking off the cuff, so I sort of just tell stories and ramble, and I don't really stand up here and actually read my work. I figure if you want to hear my work, you can buy my books if you like what I have to say tonight. I'm here to talk a little bit about writing about the modern South. I had a very interesting thing happen a couple of weeks ago. I got some communication from my agent who said that a publishing house in Istanbul wished to publish the rights to translate my Kentucky book into Turkish. And it got me to wondering, why would my book appeal to a Muslim community halfway around the world? And so I started doing a little digging into this. And I have found out through some research that internationally, the South is viewed as one of the last pure American cultures. And I think there's a saying that in the South we don't really move around a lot. So that could be, you know, everybody likes home and they just want to hang around mom and dad. But I think that we actually like it here. And we don't tend to seek outside of ourselves that much. And so that has allowed us to have a culture that is true and pure longer than perhaps other part of parts of the country. Having said that, we're changing a lot. All across the United States, we have Walmarts and CVSs and the same grocery store chains. And a lot of writers lament that this homogeneity is basically ruining our ability to differentiate different parts of the country. This is true to a certain extent, but I tend not to think that Southern literature, and you do get asked this all the time, it's like, what is Southern literature? What differentiates Southern literature? Is it the characters? Is it the language? Is it the setting? But I tend to think that Southern literature is more about the way a story is told. I tend to think that we involve perhaps more characters in family units. We tend to lean more toward family literature. We are a little bit more able to let religion into what we write. We tend to look at the characters not just as characters, but as people who come into our lives and live with us for a little while, and we learn to love them. And we don't, technically, I don't discard them after I write about them. I think about them, and I'll go somewhere and I'll think, oh, I think Shannon would have liked that. Or I think maybe Sloan would have enjoyed being here. And so, I don't know, maybe that makes me, you know, slightly mentally ill. But I do enjoy my characters and carry them with me for a long period of time, and they're like family, and I think that's very, that family is very important to us as Southerners. One time, my friend Lee Smith was telling me about a situation where she was having one of her books translated by a French lady. And the woman came over and spent some time with Lee, and they went through her book item by item that this woman did not understand certain references. And I'm wondering if I'm going to be in a position where the person is going to call me and say, you know, I don't understand this, can I come over and talk to you about some of these things, because I'm not sure that someone who's translating my book is going to understand about water skiing or about iron skillets or country ham. So it will be interesting to see what they do with it and the cover that they select for the book. I know Lee said that the woman who was translating her one of her books into French asked her, what is this biscuit? I do not understand this biscuit. So Lee said she took her to Hardee's. But if she had been at my house, my mother would have made her some angel biscuits. So one of the things that really comes into play whenever you write about the modern South is basically we are becoming a society that welcomes new people in. And one time, Lee wrote an essay that opened the New Stories from the South, which is published by Algonquin Press. Are you guys familiar with the short story collection? It comes out every year, and it's one of my favorite collections. I would love to be selected to be included in this. I think it's some of the best literature. And she made a very good point that the Asian family who moves into her North Carolina hometown and opens a restaurant has their own Southern experience, and they are now Southerners. And stories told from their point of view are Southern stories. And so we need to think about how we are growing as a society whenever we write about the South. I think a lot of people, when they think about the South, they think about Flannery O'Connor and those types of stories where, you know, people are perhaps sitting on the front porch, or they're making cornbread, or they're doing sort of things that you might find people doing 30, 40, and 50 years ago. Now, my first novel was set 30 years ago, and it was slightly autobiographical, but I tend to write more contemporary things now. And when you talk to a group of people, you can see if you're getting through, if you're making a point that people understand, you know, heads nod, and you make eye contact with your audience and whatnot. And one time I was speaking to a group of people in a community on the coastline of South Carolina, and it's called Sun City, and it was this beautiful development with all of these palm trees, and I had 150 people in the stands, and I was talking about the modern South, about writing about our culture, about what makes literature Southern, and I wasn't getting any head nods. and I didn't feel as if I was really connecting with this community. And so I was pulling out all the stops, trying to get some reaction out of the audience, and just, I felt like I didn't get anywhere. And when I finished speaking, there was a huge round of applause. And I thought, well, are they just happy I'm finished talking? Yeah. What's the deal here? So I go over to sign books, and everybody came forward to buy books, and they were very enthusiastic about it. And I thought, you know, this is very confusing to me. And so this one lady very slowly came over to the table, and she spread her fingers out in front of me, and she leaned down over me, and she said, "Sweetheart, you've got to understand, we are not Southerners, and the only way we can understand these people is to read books like yours." So that was something I learned that day. That these people are Southerners now. They've decided to live in South Carolina. But the entire community was made up of snowbirds, if you will. They call them snowbirds in Florida, but believe me, we have plenty of snowbirds in South Carolina too. And so that was the reason I wasn't really connecting with them. They did not have that background that I was talking about. But when I talk about skillets and I talk about heritage and family and whatnot, I see heads nod and I know I'm home. And I feel very at home whenever I come to Bowling Green. I enjoy writing about the modern South because, quite frankly, I think a lot of times we're misrepresented. I think that a lot of times people from outside of our area tend to put us in a box and they don't see us as multifaceted as we are. Our children now, today, have exactly the same problems that children experience all across the United States, probably all across the world. Yes, we do have the same Walmarts. We do have the same drug problems. We do have the same family problems. And books, believe it or not, are mostly about problems. You present a problem, and then you go about either fixing it or making things way worse before you fix it. But that's basically the way things go. I have been asked before about how technology has affected my writing. And when this person asked this question, I think what he really was asking was, well, how has the computer helped you with your writing? And I felt like saying, well, you know, how old do you think I am? But really, as far as technology goes and writing about the modern South, technology is one of the challenges that makes it harder to write a good, convincing book. It used to be a long time ago, like the book that I set 30 years ago. The girl gets in trouble, she's in trouble. She doesn't have a cell phone to call anybody. There's not a Garmin to help her figure her way out of her situation. I mean, she basically has to rely on her own wits. And today, what happens is, when you have someone who gets put in a situation where they're in peril, they can whip out a cell phone. You know, they can figure out a technology way to get out of the peril that you put them in. So, truly, what you have to do is consider, you know, is she going to forget to charge her cell phone? Is she going to, you know, drop her iPhone in the toilet and flush it down? You know, what's going to happen to enable her to, well, to disable her ability to save herself, if you will? And that's something else that really comes into play when you're talking about writing about modern society at all. Not just the modern South, but modern society at all. Is it's basically, technology has made it much more difficult to be a convincing writer. I mean, how many times have you guys read a book and gone, I know exactly what I would have done in that situation. I know how I could have gotten out of that situation, why I would have just called so-and-so, or I would have just done this or done that. So you have to, as a writer, you have to anticipate all of these different answers that perhaps your readers could come up with and make them convincing as you possibly can. So, talking about writing about modern life versus something that happened, say, 30 years ago, my first book that was set 30 years ago was easy for me to write because I understood that society. There were rules. There were social structures in place that the children had to adhere to. There was a very strict line between what was right and what was wrong. It was sort of taboo to get divorced back then. It was very taboo to have sex before you got married. It was the heyday of drugs, but you know, the good kids still wasn't involved. But as I was writing my second book, which is set in present day in South Carolina, it was a very different situation. You have a situation where almost everybody's divorced. You've got a situation where almost every kid has sex before they turn 18 years old. It's a sad statement about our society, but what this does is it ups the ante for a writer. How can I get someone upset about something if it's commonplace? I mean, you used to be able in the 50s to write a story about a man who cheated on his wife, a husband who cheated on his wife, and that was scandalous. And people were, you know, really taken in by the story. You know, you're not supposed to write about sex, you're not supposed to write about these types of family interactions. But today, that would seem like a very pale story. And so you have to sort of up the ante, if you will, and find more and more exciting ways to involve your writer. And we were having a discussion earlier at the table about a new book that I have written that's set in Austin, Texas. And it was a challenge for me to write this book. It's about homelessness. And I basically had to step more outside of myself, out of my comfort zone than I ever had before. I've lived in Kentucky, I've lived in South Carolina for almost as long as I lived in Kentucky, so I'm very integrated into those societies and I understand them. A book about homelessness is the farthest thing away from me and how I was brought up. In my small town in Campbellsville, no one was ever homeless. If you know, you were down on your luck, while you just moved in with mom and dad, or you threw a trailer in the backyard, or you moved in with grandma, and no one ever went hungry. You know, everyone had a garden, and everyone was willing to share. And so, as far as I knew, there was only one man in our hometown who was homeless. And when it got too cold, the police would pick him up and let him sleep in jail. And so they took care of the one homeless person that we had in my hometown. And so really, I had no profile of homelessness at all. Then I moved to South Carolina, and our profile of homelessness in Columbia, South Carolina, we have many more because it is a warmer climate. So in the South, you're necessarily going to have, I believe, a lot more homeless people where it's warm. You're going to have them in California, but Texas, Florida, South Carolina. And we tend to have, because we have no youth services within the state that I'm aware of, we tend to get mostly adults. And so my profile of homelessness became basically black men. And so I carried that around in my head for a while. Well, my brother moved to Austin, Texas, and I went to visit him. And he took me to downtown Austin, which is an absolutely fabulous place. It has everything you could possibly want. It's one of my most favorite places in the world now, after years and years of visiting. But the first time I went, I was absolutely stunned by the number of young people, teenagers, who were homeless on the streets. And I saw one girl, and her entire face had been tattooed. And I'd never seen anyone like that before, and it shocked me terribly. And I carried that girl around with me for about 15 years, thinking, how can I use her for a story? How did she get where she is? Who is she? How did she become this person? What would cause a young woman to make a decision to change her entire life like that? Because technically, she is stamped, if you will, with a certain mark that will make society view her a certain way for the rest of her life. And this girl, who lives in Austin, is now a Southern girl. But she certainly does not fit my profile of what I believe a Southern girl to be. And this has caused me to have to expand my mind once again when whenever I'm being creative, about what I would consider a Southern character. And doing the research on homelessness really changed my mind about that entire world. I basically, growing up in the hometown that I grew up in, I sort of thought of homelessness, and I grew up and watched the television shows in the 70s that were all about, you know, the runaway kids. So, you know, I'm a drug addict, so I'm going to run away from home because mom and dad doesn't like me, or they put down too many rules. And so to me, you know, all homeless kids were basically runaways. Doesn't everyone have a great home? When I started doing this research, I found out that like 50% of the kids who are on the streets have aged out of the foster care system, which means they don't have anywhere to go. And I also found out that once you're 18 and they kick you out of foster care, you do qualify for public housing, but there's a 2-year wait before you can get in. So there is 2 years minimum, 18 to 20 years old, that these kids are on the street with no support, no education, no job skills, absolutely nothing. And we as a society, in my opinion, are responsible for these kids. We've allowed this to happen. This was not what I thought about when I started writing this book. And the more that I got involved in this, the more concerned I became. And I realized this is a social issue that lots of people need to hear about. Now, I don't want to write books that are about social issues and that teach people things, because nobody wants that. Nobody wants to be preached to. So I have to figure out how to take this character, make her sympathetic, and put her within the construct of a story that's really interesting, that moves really fast, that keeps people's attention. And I hope that I have accomplished this. I wrote a version of this book last year, and I was very happy with it. And I sent it to my agent, and she sent it around, and a couple of editors looked at it and got back and said, wow, you know, the writing is really good. We think the characters are very strong. This is a very brave take on an important social issue. But, you know, we need it to move a little bit faster. We need it to basically be, what they were saying was, more commercial. And I don't really have a problem with that. This was another discussion we were having at dinner tonight about literature, and do you say, no, this is my art and I'm not going to touch it, you know, and you can't change a thing about it. Either love it the way it is, the way I do, or, you know, I'm not willing to work with you. But I've spent 20 years in public relations, and I also have a master's degree, and anybody who goes through college knows how you get torn up, and, you know, people read your stuff and they give you all this feedback, and sometimes it's nice and sometimes it's not so nice. But you have to have thin skin, and you also have to look at your work and say, you know, am I really being true to these characters? I mean, I've written a lot of beautiful things here, but does this really tell a story that supports the character, that makes people care about them, that makes people want to continue to turn the page? Because I want to write the type of books that people can't put down at night. The type of books that keep people up so they're late for work the next day. And I took another look at it and I rewrote it. I spent 3 months rewriting it, used a little different point of view, and just added a whole lot more character development and action. And I think the editors were right. I think it's a better approach. And it is now being shopped around. So we'll see who picks it up. I hope to get it published this year, but time's running out. The publishing industry doesn't move as quickly as I would like it to. I'm a very impatient person. Someone asked me one time, what's the worst thing about being a writer for you? And honestly, waiting. You know, waiting to come up with the perfect idea, then all the time that it takes to write the book is fun, and I like that. But then as soon as it's over, I would like for it to be published. But it does not work that way. It takes quite a while to get from the idea phase to actually seeing a final product on the bookshelves where, you know, people can pick it up and read it. I do very much enjoy coming and speaking to groups and talking to people.
Or whatever.
I found that Bowling Green has been very kind to me, because tons of people come up and tell me how much that they like my books, and that's always the very best part of writing for me. The same person asks, what's the best part of writing for you? And the best part for me is when someone comes up and tells me that something that I've written has moved them in some way. And so I hope that the books that I write are something that everybody can find something to relate to. My books tend to be marketed as women's fiction. My first book is actually pink, and that's not always worked great for marketing to men. And I have been at book festivals before and had men walk by, and I've reached out and actually grabbed one fella, and I said, no, wait. I said, I know it's pink, but believe me, men like this book. And they'll stop, and usually the guys will say, well, tell me what it's about. I'm like, it's got fishing, it's got baseball, it's got trap shooting, it's got taxidermy, it's got sex, it's got all kinds of things that men like. And I get fan mail from men. And I love that. I love getting fan mail, period. But I really like the letters that I get from men. And a lot of them say, I really appreciate how you represent men in your stories. You don't make them out to be the villains, and the woman's always the victim. You know, the characters seem to be on equal par. And I think that that is another thing about writing about modern life. Women have become powerful. We are educated, we have our own money, and we expect things. We don't expect to be treated poorly. You know, we expect to be on equal footing. And at the same time, I believe that men have embraced that. And therefore, it makes it much easier for me to write sympathetic characters on both sides, to make the women just as big a problem maker, just as big a protagonist, but also a villain, if you will, as the male characters. And I think in women's fiction, a lot of times, you know, the men are always the bad guys, you know? And I see Daniel's nodding over here. But I think that that is one thing that is hopefully changing about literature. I like to see men and women more on equal footing. I also think that writing about children is somewhat more challenging today. The girl in my first book, 16 years old, and she is very naive. She basically has never driven out of her hometown and is very frightened to even leave. She has very little exposure to the world, and everything is new and exciting and different. And you know, she is very much taken over by and enamored of a guy who comes into town who's from outside of town because he seems glamorous and exotic somehow. And so this young woman who's not very exposed basically allows herself to be drawn into something that's very unsavory and eventually hurts her very much. Today's children are not so naive. I mean, how many kids do you know who are past 12 years old who are not well aware of how the world works? I mean, there are very few. They have constant communication with each other. Something happens, they immediately text message each other. I have a 14-year-old, she's in eighth grade. There's a tremendous amount of drama that goes on in her school. We do have a good relationship, and she tells me the things that happen. And I'm just appalled by some of the things that these children have to deal with. And they really are dealing with much more adult issues than kids did 30 years ago. So once again, when you're writing about true characters, whether they're homeless children or they're kids who come from good families, but they're faced with choices that perhaps are somewhat unsavory, you know, the truth is kids today are very smart. They have so much more that they have to learn than I had to learn when I was younger. And so when I write about kids today, I make sure that I talk to them. I say, in this situation, you know, how would you approach this? What language would you use? What symbols would you use on your text messages? I do everything I possibly can to make sure that I portray contemporary children accurately. As far as the music that they listen to, I spent a tremendous amount of time listening to the music that street children would be listening to in Austin, Texas. You know, listening to the lyrics of the songs that are very important to these kids. These kids today do not listen to silly little songs, as a general rule. Particularly these street kids, they're listening to songs like Green Day and Beck and Everclear, and you know, the songs really beg for parental attention. And they really beg for these children to be recognized. There's one that says, "I want you to know when I'm not here." And I think that says a whole lot about the society that we live in right now. Both parents are working, you know, they're totally engulfed in trying to make money and keep the family afloat. No longer is one income enough to float a family of three or four or five. Now both parents have to be absorbed in their professions all the time. And the children are really suffering for this, and they're growing up really, really fast. By the time you're 16 years old, you're pretty much independent. As long as you've got wheels, you've got a car, you've got a cell phone, mom and dad let you go off and do whatever you want to do 9 times out of 10. So this is something that I really have to take into consideration when I'm writing about, you know, Southern children today. Yeah, they're going to go off and they're going to find that sand dune because they're a Southern child, right? They're going to go off and they're going to find the creek or the lake or whatever. I'm going to put them in a Southern location, but the truth is they're still dealing with all of the stresses and all of the situations that kids are dealing with all over the United States. And so, is literature really in a situation where, you know, Southern is such a tremendously defined, crisply defined genre anymore? I don't know. I mean, you as readers, you know, will have to decide that for yourself. Yes, we are becoming more like the rest of the country. I think the time of Southernness being so incredibly distinct from the rest of the country, the pride that we have in our region, you know, it is diminishing. It diminishes every single day. But, you know, writing Southern characters is a unique experience for me because I still have so much connection with my characters, and I always tend to write about the family unit. And I always tend to write about how the family ultimately comes back together again. And I think that that still is the focus of the South. I think we still focus very much on family. So that's where I am right now with my new book. And I also have a book of short stories that tend to be very Southern short stories. They were some of the stuff that I wrote earlier on. And some of them are set in the late 70s, like my first novel, and then some of them are contemporary, and they're about contemporary artists and people who live in barns and create artwork, and people who are Southerners, but they've moved to New York and they've decided to pursue careers in New York City, and, you know, Southerners who have moved around. So I will always write about Southerners because that is who and what I know. But as we spread out across the country, and as more people come in and infiltrate us, I think that we're going to be a more interesting group for all of that interaction. So that's my little spiel on writing about the modern South. And I have found that people like to ask questions. So let's take a few minutes. Let's see how many more minutes I have.
You mentioned Lee Smith, who is one of my favorite writers, too, and I was wondering if you distinguish between Appalachia and the South, or if you kind of combine it into one region.
The question is, do I distinguish Appalachia as a unique area, or do I write about the South in general? I guess I would have to say that I write about the South in general, because my first book is set in the foothills of Appalachia, which is where I'm from. And I never realized that I was Appalachian until I started reading Janice Holt-Giles. And she lived about 15 miles from my house, and she kept referring to these Appalachian people. So I learned that late in life. But as far as writing about the South as a region, I've set one book in Kentucky, one book in South Carolina, one book in North Carolina, one book in Texas. And my next book will be in Charleston, so I'm returning to South Carolina, and I have another book that I hope to write about the thoroughbred industry in Lexington. And that one is actually the first book I ever thought of, and I've been collecting information for that one for a number of years, but because the thoroughbred industry is so very, very specific about their language, and I'm not as well versed in that as I really need to be. I've continued to collect information, but not moved forward on it because I find it somewhat daunting. But my next book that I'm working on right now is about a chef and a botanist, brothers, who live in Charleston in South Carolina, and I'm learning all about heirloom tomatoes and all sorts of heirloom vegetables, and that's a very Southern thing, I think, the backyard garden. So I think this will be a very Southern book. Another question?
How do you feel the air conditioner has changed the South?
How do I feel the air conditioner has changed the South? Well, I don't know. I've always had an air conditioner, but I will say when I was in college at the University of Kentucky, I had a boyfriend from Kalamazoo, Michigan, which I thought wasn't a real place until I met him. My grandfather used to say, oh, they're just from Kalamazoo. And I thought that wasn't real. But he always made fun of us because he would come down in the summertime and my mother would just have the air conditioner cranking. You know, it would be on 68 all summer long. And he thought that was just absolutely crazy. But he also said about July and during summer break, he said, gosh, I can't wait till you come back to school. The longer you stay in Campbellsville, the less I can understand you. but, you know, I wrote a short story one time about two little girls published in Yamasee, the University of South Carolina's publication, literary journal. And these two little girls sit outside with their grandmother, and their grandmother snaps beans, and they play jacks, and they jump rope, and they spy on the woman across the street because it's hot and the windows are always open. And they think that she's absolutely glamorous because she drives a convertible, and she's the only person in town who has a convertible, and she's in her late 20s, and she's not married, and she smokes these long cigarettes, and she wears great big sunglasses, and they're just totally enamored of her. And they sneak across the road, and they sit underneath her window, and they spy on her, and they listen to her, and they listen to her telephone conversations with her lover, her older lover. And then one day, they get air conditioning. And so their connection with the woman they're spying on gets cut off. So I believe it does affect my writing, the air conditioning, come to think of it. So yes, that was a good question.
I think better than most writers I've read recently pay meticulous attention to even the most mundane detail, which is really vivid. I was thinking, reading your book to my wife the other day, she's commented that one of the characters is in the food store and she'd like to buy these sesame seed buns, but she doesn't buy them because the sister has diverticulitis and she knows the sesame seeds are going to irritate her. How much research goes into this kind of, you know, I think what Barbara Tuchman would call really wonderful corroborative detail, which makes such a wonderful novel.
Well, thank you for the compliment. A lot of those things in that book were based on things I heard my mother say. So this woman is sort of disgruntled because she can't buy the buns that she wants because she has to take care of her sister. And, you know, I've heard different people say, oh, I don't think she's really sick, but she says she can't, you know, she can't eat those buns. A lot of that book came from, you know, actual experiences. I think there's something in the book that basically says there's two things that I never want again in life. One's a fireplace and the other one's a man. Yeah. And all of those things are things that I've heard my mother or my grandmother or some relatives say. And I think a lot of that was very, very easy for me. In the other book, you're talking about details like about food. In South Carolina, people cook their shrimp and they eat them hot. You know, they dump them out and they're steaming and they just stick their hands in these steaming shrimp and start breaking off the tails. And I love that. I've come to really love eating hot shrimp. And I brought 5 pounds of shrimp from the coast with me when I came home day before yesterday. And I made them and I dumped them out and my daughter and I started eating them. And my mom said, you're going to eat those hot? And I'm like, they're better this way. You know, trust me, they're really good. And a native South Carolinian doesn't chill their shrimp and peel it and put it on the side of, you know, I mean, shrimp is like, you know, hogs are in Kentucky. They're ubiquitous. Everyone eats them practically every meal. I mean, shrimp and grits is a big deal in South Carolina, and they don't wait around for that stuff to chill. They cook it, they eat it. And, you know, I like being able to incorporate those sorts of local details. I think that makes things more realistic. And my South Carolina book, I was worried about it because I'm not a native South Carolinian, but I had so much detail in it, I really wanted it to seem real. And the woman who reviewed my book for the Myrtle Beach paper gave me this beautiful quote. It basically said, "You'd never know she wasn't a native."
What a compliment.
And so that's the highest compliment I believe that I can be paid. That's what I'm shooting for. So I'm hoping these people in Texas like my book. I sure do like their beef brisket, so.
Well, what fascinates me about your writing is that I walk down memory lane. You know, being one of nine children and having so many experiences, and I was thinking about, as you were winding up your talk, how you all go in different directions. You do different things, different professions, and yet you all come back together and you are united. And it just... Now my brain doesn't stand still. Wonderful, but you are wonderful, and I really appreciate every single thing that you have written. And I think when you get home, you will see that there is a memory in here. And okay. The memory is for the lovely time that you gave us tonight, and we hope you never forget it.
Oh, thank you.
On behalf of our sponsor, WKU Libraries Friends Group, our genial host here at Barnes & Noble, we want to thank you for coming up. We want to remind you that the Southern Kentucky Book Fest will be next week, Friday, with Children's Day and the Kentucky Writers Conference at the Carol Nicely Center on Nashville Road, and then on Saturday, the Book Festival, starting at 9 o'clock, and hope you'll join us then. And again, thank you and good evening.
Oh, could I say something as
yes.
well? I have cards up here if you guys would like to take a card. It goes. There's a website address on there, just janamacmahon.com, and I have buttons on there for a Facebook fan page. And I post up all types of literary information. It's not solely about me. It's about book festivals that are coming up. It's about new books that have come out that I admire, or, you know, books that friends of mine have put out, which doesn't mean I don't admire those as well. But I always try to do friends favors by letting people know when their books come out. I post connections to really nice writing articles, things that I think would be helpful to the up-and-coming writer, and just, you know, weird words I find that interest me and things like that. So please like my fan page and keep up with the release of my new novel. Thank you.